listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. It never ceases to amaze me how dependent Australians are on mobile phones. A new research released last week by Microsoft Australia reveals just how integral the mobile phone has become to Australians, with some extremely interesting results. Would it surprise you that we're now more reliant than ever on mobile phones, and for much, much more than making phone calls? The Microsoft commissioned research also found that Australian adoption and use of text and MMS has blown sky high, with over half of the respondents indicating that they text more now than they have in the past 2 years. However, despite the importance that Australians place on their phones, many are still damaging or misplacing their prized possessions. Nearly a quarter of the population has broken their mobile phone, dropped it into water, or lost their mobile phone altogether. 77% of Australians regularly misplace their phone and have to call it to locate it. And nearly 50% of all Australian males surveyed, aged between 16 and 19, have lost their phone. Only 20% of females in the same age group have lost theirs. The survey also revealed that as Australians become more and more dependent on their phones and less dependent on their own memory, they are more at risk of losing important information numbers and photos stored on their phones. 63% of Australians don't know how to retrieve some of the information stored on their phones or back it up, risking permanent loss. Only one third of Australians surveyed know their best friend's phone number by memory, and only half of all Australians surveyed know their own office phone number. They rely on their phones for this. Yet only one third of Australians have all their phone numbers backed up elsewhere. Around one in six Australians regularly have issues accessing saved numbers, and the same number of Australians are also unable to download mobile phone applications. Three quarters of all females under the age of 30 have cherished photos saved on their mobile phone, yet one third don't know how to retrieve them. And only one third of females have their photos backed up elsewhere. Australians may be quick adopters of technology, but it still looks like the majority of users are Luddites. Does this mean that the ubiquitous mobile phone is a necessity in this day and age, or is it peer group pressure that drives us to purchase one of our new best friends? Maybe it's neither. Maybe we're just keeping up with the Joneses.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam turns his attention to Freeview's latest shenanigans. Police turn to Twitter for this year's muck-up day. Apple expands e-commerce on the iPhone. Microsoft's Outlook is the target of the week for those keen to peddle malware. Twitter begins lists beta. And the Italian town of Venice rolls out city-wide Wi-Fi. And as per normal, first up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, fraud experts warn that organised crime gangs are now turning to identity theft. A new consumer action group speaks its mind about the structural separation of Telstra. Family Guy gears up to sell Windows 7, and a Hadron Collider scientist is arrested over suspected links to Al-Qaeda. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Forget drug trafficking and payroll robberies. A symposium on internet security last week heard that major crime gangs are now focusing their efforts on identity theft. The problem is now estimated to be costing Australians over $3 billion annually. Queensland's Deputy Police Commissioner, Ian Stewart, told the conference last week that identity fraud is one of the fastest growing crimes internationally, and that social networking sites like MySpace and Facebook are facilitating the harvesting of sensitive personal information by criminals.
Anyone who goes onto a social networking site and joins up to one of them can have a look at random almost and pick up people's dates of birth, where they work, family details. That's gold to people who want to steal identities.
The National Crime Symposium was held on Queensland's Gold Coast and was told that one Australian out of every five has fallen victim to some form of identity theft, and that 1.5 million people have had their credit cards illegally copied in the past year. Experts said that the digital age meant people's personal information was travelling in nanoseconds through the internet, and that information flows faster than the ability to control that flow. In some cases, the consequences can be catastrophic. Experts also said that letters, bills, financial statements, and correspondence containing personal information should be shredded before it's thrown into a rubbish bin to minimise the risk of identity theft. A new consumer advocacy group has told a Senate inquiry that the government's separation legislation needs to go further to protect consumer rights. The newly formed Australian Communications Consumer Action Network, or ACAN, is headed by Mr. Alan Asher, who previously worked at the ACCC and the Overseas Telecommunications Commission. Mr. Asher told the Senate inquiry that universal service obligations should be built into the legislation to protect consumers, particularly in light of the poor track record of carriers to maintain services and repair faults. Mr. Asher also blasted Telstra for what he described as inflicting a penalty on customers who paid their bills on any medium other than the internet, while simultaneously providing inadequate protection for online users. Mr. Asher then described the decision to split Telstra's wholesale and retail operations as being 20 years overdue. Telstra's Executive Director of Regulatory Affairs, Dr. Tony Warren, argued that separation had not been successful in the UK or New Zealand, that it had hamstrung the incumbent, harmed shareholders, and harmed consumers. The Senate committee is due to report in less than a fortnight. A variety show wholly sponsored by Microsoft is being produced by the creator of the animated sitcom Family Guy. The program will be shown in November without commercials and will feature Windows 7-oriented content. The creator of popular cartoon Family Guy, Seth MacFarlane, and co-conspirator Alex Borstein appeared together on stage last year in a live show that mixed in Family Guy themes. The show will now be expanded in a deal with Microsoft to promote its upcoming operating system, Windows 7. IT Wire reported last week that Family Guy Presents, Seth and Alex's almost live comedy show, will include live-action Family Guy musical numbers, animated features, and guest appearances by celebrities. And while the rest of the world was worried about the Large Hadron Collider creating mini black holes somewhere beneath France and Switzerland, it seems that more mundane controversies are now in the offing. French authorities last week arrested one of the facility's scientists for alleged links with a group allied to Al-Qaeda in northern Africa. The scientist does not work directly for the European Nuclear Research Agency, CERN, but rather was working for one of its clients, conducting an experiment using CERN's facilities. There's no suggestion of any terrorist attacks were being planned, although the scientist has been charged with criminal association with a terrorist enterprise. Here in Australia, scientific research at the Australian Nuclear Organisation, ANSTO, operates on a more restricted basis than CERN's open access model. ANSTO's Executive General Manager, Dr. Ron Cameron, told ABC Radio last week that security checks and access controls used in Australia's nuclear research facilities are robust and secure.
Well, our system here is that we have a graded security system that's based on guidelines from ASIO and the Commonwealth Protective Security Manual, and that means that the degree of vetting is determined by the degree of confidentiality needed for the work and the degree of access to sensitive material that that person might have.
In Europe, CERN says that it's currently assisting the French authorities with their inquiries. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Victoria Police have made the news. They're telling walkers to turn off their iPods.
I'm afraid I still don't agree with that, no.
Yes, you can download it. Real-time protection is on and virus and spyware definitions are up to date. That's all I can tell you.
But of course, if you've got an ISO file, you don't need to burn a CD or a DVD at all. You just mount it on your desktop and run it through.
I don't want Google to display any comments at all if somebody has SideWiki enabled and they go to my website. At the moment, there's no facility for me to disable those comments.
Yes, I am still indeed alive, contrary to rumour, and I am making video podcasts.
The chat room's gone crazy here. People just want to listen to Monty Python all night. They don't want us to talk about technology, Andrew.
Spam, 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 spam. They've been spam, 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 spam.
I'll let Graham plug his laptop into the mixer tonight.
And look what happens.
Look what's happening.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, that we are, the panel. Very good evening to you all. Welcome wherever you might be listening to us, across this big brown land of ours, or even across the other side of the world. You may be listening to us on the stream. Welcome wherever you are. chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we're all at if you want to come and say good day. There's a few others in the in our little chat room getting there, and well, yes, it'll be a thriving community in next to no time, no doubt. And what a week it's been, sitting across in front of me this evening, three of the best. You can go to the webpage, actually, techtalkradio.com.au. Click on the team. There's new photos there. You can see all of them, and you can click them and do things. Even a photo of JD there. Justin's in this evening, back from the land of the long white cloud. How are all the sheep, JD?
60 million sheep, apparently. I got told while I was over there.
60 million?
60 million
what's
sheep.
What's the ratio of sheep to people
something
in New
like
Zealand?
60 to 1.
Really? Hello to everyone listening in Magic FM up there in the North Island of New Zealand. Yeah, good. Did you go up there?
No.
No? Where were you? Down south?
Yes.
In Auckland.
I was.
Oh, and what were you doing there? Business, was it?
It was business.
Oh, well.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Didn't get to use any technology at all, but someone was doing a podcast where I was.
Yeah.
And they were using exactly the same software that we use here on Ustream.
Yeah.
Which was good to see.
Excellent. So, yeah, it's being used out there. That's good. Dr. Ron.
Hello.
Were you here last week?
No. No, I'm just a part-time panellist these days.
It was a bit of a blur last week, but anyway, we made it through.
Hey, Adam came in off the bench. Thanks, Adam, for filling in.
That's right, he did too. Yeah,
did a good job.
Excellent. Yes, it was a good job. And Dr. Graham's in here this evening too.
Sorry, I spoke before I was spoken to.
That's all right, you can do that.
I was going to say, I like the shows when Adam comes in. He always has.
You like the shows when I'm not here, don't you?
No, that's not what I said.
We do, because there's no Ustreamy thing, is there?
These I like cameras the shows when the neither of these blokes are here when the cameras are all missing, but that's a different story.
Absolutely.
No, I like the shows when Adam comes in, because he always has an opinion on something. He always has something to say.
What did you go off about last week with passwords and the Wave, wasn't it? We had a very interesting discussion on the new Google Wave.
Yeah, I still don't have my head around the Wave.
Did he get the Wave going while you're live?
He was waving away as we were on air.
And I think Jason Oakley, one of our listeners, came on board in the Wave.
Hi, Warlock.
That's... Okay, cool. Yeah, okay, there you go. So, our listeners might know Warlock as the...
His secret identities are falling like flies.
I know. But our listeners might know of... you probably heard the Stingers, the yibbida yibbida type sort of thing. I think that was him, wasn't it?
Is that Warlock, is it?
I think it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I could be wrong, but I think it was.
He gets as much airtime as we do.
He do. He'll come up in the chat.
I think the file name that I put in the podcast for that says that it is. So.
Is it? Oh, well, there you go. Hey, anyway, it's been an interesting week this week, and no manner of speaking. It's getting very close to the launch of Windows 7, amongst other things. But, Graham, what's going on? You let the smoke out of the components on the forum.
Yeah.
There's been email.
Yeah, the forum's not well.
What happened?
I think it's been put into an induced coma.
Yeah.
For those of you trying to log on to forum.techtalkradio.com.au, apparently it's in heaven somewhere at the moment.
No. It's in intensive care.
Oh, okay. So it hasn't passed on that far yet. We haven't done the last rites.
There might be...
Dr. Ron's shaking his head. Good for radio there.
We might lose a little bit back to the last backup. But
It will return.
It'll definitely be back. Dr. Ron is
excellent. Does that mean I can reset my password and remember what it was?
Practicing his medical skills on it.
Oh, are you? You've given it CPR.
Oh, absolutely. So, I have. I've been.
So, Doctor, what news of it?
I've had the text pad open and I've been manually editing old databases, PostgreSQL databases, if that means anything to anybody.
Oh, dear.
Trying to get it to be able to be imported into the new PHP BB version.
Yes.
Fantastic. Yes.
But we'll get there. So, we'll keep you posted on Twitter and we'll keep you posted on the main Tech Talk webpage with our progress. Sorry about the outage, which will hopefully be for not too much
It'll
longer.
It'll return. It'll return. Yes. Back with vengeance. New artwork. And speaking thereof, we'd like to welcome our new sponsor to the program. Yes, if you haven't
this
caught on already,
welcome
to D-Link. D-Link are sponsoring us now. Isn't that fantastic?
It's very fantastic.
So, yeah, if you go to our website, you'll catch a little D-Link banner on the top there. By all means, give it a click, everybody, because then you can go through and check out their wares, which would be well worth having a bit of a look-see because they've got some good stuff. I must admit, I have many devices of that little... I like the little rubbery things that sit, you know, they lock them all together. Have you got that? I reckon that's really good because you can stack
so stack devices up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as you collect modems and routers, it gets higher and higher and higher.
Yeah. And they make all that sort of stuff and with a name for home market. So, yeah, little networking stuff. So your ADSL modem, your network switch to connect your PCs together, your print servers to put your printer on the network, all those sorts of things.
Yeah. They've got one little gadget, which I want too, which is those photo frame things. They've got a really good one.
Digital photo frames,
which talks wirelessly and connects into all that. So I'm going to ask for Christmas present for my girls. But anyway. Hey, so welcome aboard to D-Link.
Welcome, D-Link. It's great.
Thank you. Finally, at last, to have them on board. Now, Dr. Ron, what was I going to ask you? Oh, Coro. That's what I was going to ask you.
Plenty of Coro.
Yeah.
I've got some exciting news as well before the Coro. There's lots of news and stuff.
I've got an apology too, so don't let me forget to do that.
What's your apology quickly?
Oh, okay. Grace was going to be in from Microsoft. Do you remember Grace? She came in when they did that phone survey thing last time where what people did with their mobile phones on the toilet, and we got into that sort of, go back and listen to that podcast. I'm not going there. But we had her in recently, and yet again this week Microsoft has released a new mobile phone survey, which I alluded to in the opening of the show. Now, Grace was going to join us this evening, but unfortunately she's had other issues pop up, so we're going to do that on the 9th, which is 2 weeks away. And next week, guess who we've got on the show?
Bill Gates.
No.
Right.
No, Bill Gates wasn't available, so instead...
No, we've got a real doctor.
Oh.
A real doctor. Now, do you remember, cast your mind back to the 90s, the Austereo Network, late night, Sunday night?
Yeah.
There was a program on called Pillow Talk.
Oh, I used to listen to Pillow Talk.
I think a lot of our listeners would have listened to Pillow Talk.
Yeah.
It was a radio show which was all about sex and sexuality.
You're talking about Dr. Coburn.
I am talking about Dr. Coburn.
Is she coming in on
Dr.
the program?
Dr. Sally Coburn, Dr. Feelgood herself, will be in this very studio with us next week.
A real doctor.
A real doctor.
It's about time. That's good.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the thing that I've found amazing, like this, all these questions I want to ask her, like, you know, imagine that program now if they had what we have now in the internet and sort of, you know, being able to interact with a radio program online. That would have been pretty impressive. But
it might have been pretty scary with that program.
It could have been. But the thing which really I'm impressed with is Sally's into computers. She builds raid arrays and she does technology and all that sort of stuff too. So we're going to find out about all this and what she does, you know, apart from being a qualified doctor and a very well-known person on Australian radio. She's a bit of a gun hand with
a bit of a closet tech head.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. So I shared 2 hours of her radio show on 3RW the other night. So I feel it's only right, and she's going to come. Excuse me. She's going to come and join us, which is going to be just a bit of fun. So sorry, Dr. Ron, back to Coro.
No, that's all right. Does she know what she's getting herself into though? Coming onto this program, she's a bit of a tech head.
Who knows? We'll find out.
Yeah, it could be interesting. Out. My other exciting news for this week was that I've now got naked DSL running at home.
Oh, you're
very exciting.
You've dropped your line rental, have you?
I have dropped my line rental for the same amount of money that
Bared
I was
it all
paying.
To the world.
Yeah. For the same amount that I was paying to my former ISP.
Now you've got Bob.
I have got a Bob.
Broadband in a box.
Broadband in a box.
Now these people aren't sponsors, by the
Bib.
Way. I know. I'm still trying to work out that. I'm still trying to work out their acronym too. I think someone at Ionet can't spell properly.
Their marketing department had a schmoozy lunch,
a
I think.
Box. Biab.
B-R-B-S, Bob. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's working very well. It's actually a rebadged Belkin router, I think.
Oh, okay.
And it's working quite well. It's an ADSL 2 Plus router.
Engine have something very similar, I think I've seen on their website too.
They probably do. Look, it's got like a 5-port switch in it.
Yeah.
It's got wireless.
Yep.
It's got voice over IP gateway.
Yep.
And it's got an interface like a physical handset so you can put a cordless phone You can drop a cordless
phone. That's what I've seen on the television ad,
yeah.
Oh, I've done that with my engine box, actually. I use cordless phones connected to it throughout the house.
Have they got a similar thing, have they?
Well, the one I've got doesn't do the wireless and so forth. I use my wireless router, so it's just a connector between the VoIP service and the phone lines in the house.
Yep.
So half of what you've got, effectively.
So half, yeah. This is working very well. I'm getting a little bit faster than I used to. Now, I'm now on ADSL 2+, but I'm about as far away from our telephone exchange as you can possibly be.
I'm not. We share the same exchange.
We do, yeah, but if you have to tell us about your broadband tale of why a bit later. But I'm getting about 4 megabits per second at the moment. I should be able to get faster than that. I'm yet to ring up iiNet and get them to have a bit of a tweak, a bit of a look at the line. I'm sure they can make it a little bit faster.
Yep.
But it's working very well, so I'm quite happy with it.
Now, my question for you about Bob, this little black box which they're flogging on the telly.
Yep.
They're saying that you just get it out of the box, you plug it in, and it just works. Did you find that? Did you have to do anything?
Just about. Well, I tinkered with it because I wanted to do something a bit non-standard with
really
it.
Really good for... Yeah, well, forget about what you wanted to do with
it. Yeah, yeah.
But for someone who has no concept about internet and wants to get a device which connects them to the internet, to their phone and all that sort of stuff, how easy was it?
I think it would have been very easy for them. I think there's only a couple of things that they would need to do apart from plugging it all in, putting the right plugs in the right sockets. They would have needed to have put their username and their password into the router so that when it connects to iiNet, it actually authenticates correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to do that, but I was tinkering and doing some other strange doctor on things as well. But I got it going very, very easily. There wasn't much for me to do. And I've got to say, the whole churning process, moving from my previous ISP to the new ISP, and also the process of taking my telephone number and porting that from Telstra...
Can I ask you a personal
question? ...to VoIP on iiNet, it worked extremely well. Can ask me your personal question? Yep.
How was it? Was it satisfying to ring, to have that?
It's a good feeling.
It was?
I was worried that I was going to have to make a dozen calls to Telstra for screwing something up or a dozen calls to iiNet for screwing something up, but it all just worked, and it worked very well.
It felt good, did it?
It did. And there was this very, I've got to tell you this very funny anecdote. While they were in the process of moving the phone number, there were a couple of days there where the number wasn't working, but you called it, and you got what was obviously an iiNet message, and it said, "Hi, thanks for calling this number. This customer is currently upgrading to a much better telephone service. They'll be able to answer your call in a few days' time," or something to that effect.
Yeah, worse than that effect.
Yeah, it was a bit of a tongue-in-cheek recorded announcement, but
excellent.
It's all going quite well.
Excellent.
Now, Coro, Andrew, lots of correspondence this week. Levi says, and we heard from Levi a couple of weeks ago.
Hi, Levi.
Hi, I want to know if Google Chrome OS, it's the new operating system that Google's talking about, will use up bandwidth left, right, and center because it is mainly an online operating system. So, well, that's an interesting question, Levi. It's going to depend on how you use it, I suppose. There's nothing that Google Chrome would be chewing up bandwidth for above and beyond what you probably currently use, how your bandwidth is used, that is for email or for web browsing, or if you're doing file transfers using... you know, whatever it is you're using, like, for example, buying things online at an iTunes music store or something along those lines. I don't think it would use any more bandwidth than your current browsing habits.
Except that I'm guessing that the word processor and other applications are all online applications.
Well, if you're using the cloud, I guess.
Hmm.
Maybe it depends on how it's configured. I haven't installed Google Chrome OS yet. I don't know if... Is it available in beta? I'm not sure.
I don't know. Googles in beta, isn't it?
Well, it's true. It is. Levi, stay tuned. We'll do some tests for you. We'll try and load it up and we'll put it through the hoops and see what it does. Andy says, "Hi, guys. Two pieces of feedback on the most recent show and on both the Do Not Call register and credit card transactions." Were you talking about this last week?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Where were you?
I had a better offer. Oh, I got a note from Mum here. "Do not call register. Years and years ago," says Andy, "I worked at a market research firm calling people up for surveys. At the time, the software that we were using would randomly select a 4-digit exchange prefix."
And we never believed him. Yeah, sure.
"And the final 4 numbers of the phone number would be randomly generated. For this reason, you'd often get fax machines, silent numbers, payphones. People would often complain, 'This is a silent number.' But no matter what you said about the random selection, people wouldn't listen to reason. If people complained, it was possible to include their number in the computer's list of numbers to not call, but people had to specifically request it, and it only applied to that particular company." He says, I don't know how they do things now. It's probably much the same. Obviously, the Do Not Call register didn't exist back then.
But they can't now, can they? If they ring someone who's on the Do Not Call register, unless they're... whatever the excuse is, a charity or surveying
people. Well, that's what Andy says. But even now, it doesn't apply to market research firms who are genuinely conducting a survey.
No, that doesn't. You're right. It doesn't. That's the loophole.
It's just for a commercial call.
That's right. Cold calling. And hi, would you like to buy ABC product?
But it's like when people, I've had a few telemarketers of recent times ring up. You know, the first thing they say, hi, I'm not trying to sell you anything. Oh, good. Goodbye.
What do you want there? Yeah, you invited me over to your place for dinner.
How can I help you?
Yeah, that's
what
right.
What would you like to buy from me? Yeah.
Andy also says, re-credit cards. You spoke about credit cards at point of sale and how you should hold on to your card and swipe it yourself. I agree with this. I hate people taking my card and swiping it, especially servo workers. He means service stations, I think.
Yes, yeah.
Who think it's acceptable to snatch it out of your hand and select your account for you.
Yeah, but
he says.
A lot of those people assume that that's what people want to do. And I think people are learning these days. We don't do that.
Andy says, when I had a merchant account with the Communist Bank, the material that was...
The what?
Is that what he wrote? Communist Bank. The material that was provided to me stated that the merchant should always take the card and hold on to it until the transaction was complete, particularly for larger purchases or in cases of suspicion. I don't know if this is still included in the merchant guide, as I deactivated my merchant account and terminal a few years back. Cheers, probably Andy.
Because wasn't there a whole idea they'd take it away and cut it up if it was declined or something like that?
And probably, but that was just to protect the bank.
Brave New World, guys. That back in the old days, the merchant also needed to be able to keep the card so he could check the signature against the docket that you signed to check the signature on the back. Now, these days, of course, don't have signatures. You key in your PIN number. There's absolutely no need for the merchant to take your card if you're using your PIN number to pay.
Yeah, I've got one of those new chip cards, and it's very confusing. I don't know whether you guys are the same, because some merchants want you to stick it in, and others want you to swipe it.
The machine tells you what to do.
Yeah.
If you swipe it and it wants it stuck in the bottom, then...
Yeah, but there's no rhyme nor reason. It's basically determined by the retailer. And a lot of the retailers have the spot down the bottom where you can stick it in, but they say, oh, no, can you swipe it, please? Okay.
My financial institution tells me, if you're doing these types of transactions, press credit. If you're doing these types of transactions, press savings.
Yeah.
If you're doing this type, press check.
And the reason for that is because you're with a credit union and they're trying to keep fees low, and so they're trying to...
What's it come up on a terminal and says that?
No. They send you literature to...
The instructions get sent to you.
They send you propaganda and they say to keep our costs down, like Graeme's explaining. Yeah.
Yeah, so that the... to maximise the direction in which the... what do you call it? The
transaction fees?
Yeah.
Them things. Very good.
Roy says, at least you know that I keep checking out your web page regularly. I'm beginning to think your webmaster is deliberately trying to test me. Again this week, there was a challenge.
It was a challenge and an opportunity, wasn't it?
I don't know. I read this email now. I know what he's going to complain about, the podcast.
Episode 41, 12th of October. The podcast link points to the previous week's podcast.
No.
So I remembered the advice that the podcast would also be posted on the forum page. Well, let's not mention the forum. My solution was to download the full two-hour show, because that link was correct.
He's onto us.
I just kept trying because I still need my fix of current Tech Talk Radio. I'm waiting for the next contest you provide me. Cheers,
Thank
Roy.
Thank you for persisting, Roy.
That's good. I checked that out. There was nothing wrong with that. Maybe
the link was
cached.
Okay. Yeah. Might have been a faulty link that was cached wrong.
No. With the XML file, it goes up for the podcast. There's two feeds. There's one for Apple, iTunes, and there's one for everybody else.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I did send Roy an email, but you didn't reply to me.
There's also the actual links on the webpage as well.
Yeah, no, they're good. Trust me.
Okay.
So when Roy figures out how to download this episode...
Yeah, the naming structure is the same, guys. Just bang the rocks together.
look at the numbers towards the end. Yeah,
yeah.
GD says, guys, don't mention the forum, GD. I wanted to post something about the gazillion Microsoft updates today. My Win Mobile
iPack... Oh, don't start
iPack,
me. Oh, I went into the office this morning and the server was down.
My iPack won't synchronize anymore. I'm just wondering if anyone else has had the same problem.
Oh, we've got iPacks at work, the newer versions, Win Mobile's 5 or something like that, and they won't convert to daylight saving time.
Maybe this is why Grace didn't want to come on the show tonight.
Maybe your calendar was out.
We tried everything that's supposed to fix it.
My IPsec fell over.
Excuse me?
My IPsec fell over.
You seen a doctor about that?
Yeah, it was painful.
No, I hate to tell you, but this link is wrong.
Yeah, well, there you go. So.
Hit refresh, hit refresh.
Yeah, yeah, control R. We've control moved R. webs. Can I make an excuse? We've changed web servers. We've changed format. We've gone from ASP. So nothing in Google will work at the moment. IPsec is one of the services in Windows Server, which lets you sort of do network address translation and connect out to the internet and do all your IP stuff.
Yes.
And mine didn't want to do that this morning. I was connected to the internet beautifully. I could ping things, but I couldn't actually connect out or do anything like that. So I had an office full of people going, hey, we're bored, we can't connect to the internet. Lauren, you know what Brian, you know what that. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Hey, but can I give you a tip? What you do is if you run your own DNS server and you can get to it at work, just change the DNS settings for YouTube and things like that to something else, like gobacktowork.com, and put your own page up saying, stop it.
Is that a real site, gobacktowork.com?
I don't know.
We should register that.
I don't know. Yes. It's a good idea, good. Isn't it?
Trevor says, I see in your show notes, you say, hey, it's Saturday, aired on Tuesday.
I get
now,
it, Brian.
I know Queenslanders are slow, but I'm sure I watched it on Wednesday night. Thanks, Trevor. Andrew's under the pump here now. And Tardis says he was looking at stuff in relation to our new sponsorship with D-Link, which is good. He made a couple of comments here about forums not being there. Oops, he says, this is a tad awkward, but not quite as bad as Dr. Ron's choice of music. What are you trying to say, Tardis? Not as bad as Dr. Ron's choice of music. They haven't put me in charge of the music since, though, so we should read into that.
Absolutely.
What's there? That's our correspondence for the week. Thank you, Tardis and Trevor and GD and everybody.
One more thing.
Yes.
If you're sitting in front of your computer at the moment, bring up the Google device, where you type in things, and make sure you've got the preemptive text.
Google.com?
Yeah, you know when you type in the box and it brings the words up down the bottom of the screen where you start typing?
Right.
Please type in the words.
Yes.
Why does my wife?
Why does my wife?
That's all. I just want you to type that in. I'm not going to say anything else, but it should provide hours of entertainment for you. And look at the number of people that have got the results.
The auto-complete things.
And I'm sure if there's any ladies out there, I'm sure that you can do the same thing for the men, but this was doing the rounds of the office today.
What were you doing that caused you to have to type in?
I like the third one down.
What does your wife do that you were wanting to Google it?
Nothing. It was just what the guys were talking about in the office this morning. I thought it was absolutely hilarious.
Oh, enough of this frivolity. Is there a rundown? Should we start a program?
There is. We may have a break in a minute.
That's all our correspondence, Andrew. Thanks, everybody. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au if you'd like to send us a message, and we'll read it on air and discuss it and banter it around.
All right. We were going to have a chat to Grace tonight, but I do want to go touch briefly on this internet, the mobile phone thingy, the survey, because Microsoft from time to time do these research. Now, this is Microsoft Australia. It's not the global people that do it, but they like doing research, and Grace is a bit of fun. We've had her on the show before, and as you sort of realise that...
She was talking about places where people send text messages.
Absolutely. And I was really quite looking forward to having a chat to her tonight, so I'm a bit disappointed. But anyway, that's life. Some of the other interesting parts about this research which came out, and I was talking about this on ABC Radio the other night, but put your hand up if you're in this category. Almost 60% of Australians admit to regularly swearing at their mobile phone as a way to release their frustrations.
Well, I've got an Android-powered device. What can I say?
Have you?
Yeah, there's swear words sometimes.
Maybe that's a particular brand of mobile phone which makes people swear more than others. Maybe they should have asked that survey. Now, this one had me absolutely tossed. One in four Australian men claim to have secretly stored phone numbers that are deliberately hidden from girlfriends, wives, and friends.
How many?
One in four Australian men, which means one in person in this room here.
No comment. What? Really?
Has got secretly stash number. Now, I want to know how they do it. How do you secretly, do you just put...
You make up a name. You make up a name. John.
It says Jack from the footy club, and yeah. It's really, yes.
Oh,
so when your wife comes down with the phone, says, Jack from the footy club.
There you go. Thanks. I'll ring him back later.
Yeah. Must be Jack's other half, yeah.
Yeah, Jack's better half or anything like that.
I do have entries in my address book, which simply have the name Danger. Or do not answer. So yeah, I've received a call from them once, like many years ago, and thought, I'm going to save that for all the wrong reasons, and just put the word danger there. And occasionally, it lights up on my phone, do not answer. So I said, okay, I'm not answering that one.
Oh, excellent. I'm glad to hear that.
Gee, I'm boring. I just put people's names in my contact list and synchronize it to everything.
Well,
there's some good ideas there.
Yeah, potentially, but then you're tempted to answer it maybe in. You feel guilty, but if you just see the words do not answer or danger, do not answer.
And you don't know which one it was.
That's right, you don't feel as guilty.
77% of Australians regularly misplace their phone and have to call it to locate it.
Your name's there, Graham. It's all right. I answer yours.
That's sorry. Me. Yes. You're not listening. Yes, you're not paying attention.
Yes, I've done that one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. My lovely wife routinely has to ring her mobile phone.
Yeah, one which really scared me is nearly a quarter of the population has broken their mobile phone, dropped it in water, or lost their mobile phone altogether. And I guess that comes back to Poo Girl, which was that little thing. You know, how people would have, I don't know, there must be some pretty amazing ways to lose a mobile phone. And obviously, that's one of them. But how else would you do it? Like, just put it down somewhere? Actually, I know someone who's put on their car and driven off.
Yeah, I've got a story like that.
Oh,
I did that many, many years ago with a phone I had. And I went back and found it on the side of the road and it still worked.
Did you?
Yeah.
I used to work for the same government department that JD works for here.
Yes.
And we used to repair pagers that used
like,
to get...
Like this one.
Like this one he's got right here. There he is, holding up to the webcam.
Where's that one been?
And
you don't
the pagers,
know.
That's right. they used to get dropped in all sorts of unsavoury places, a la Poo Girl that Andrew's talking about. It's like, oh, this doesn't work anymore. I said, well, no, it won't. You should have pressed flush and
bought
a new one. Sorry, Andrew.
The other one, too, was that a majority of Australians can't remember their work phone numbers. Now, I find that really hard to believe because most organisations have a fairly memorable number where you can ring in, especially some people who work in this room. So it's one of those things where how can you not forget, you know, like 9888 0000? It's not hard to sort of like forget those sort of numbers. Yet most Australians don't know their work number. I must admit.
I know mine because I give it out all the time.
Yeah, same. Yeah. And the switchboard, because if I'm out and about and I want to ring someone and I haven't got their number with me or I can't scroll through my contact list, I just ring the switchboard and say, can you put me through to XYZ?
Now, one thing that Grace didn't put in her press release, which I have here in front of me, is the order of priority for people about putting who sits at number 1, 2, and 3
in the shortlist
of those 9 or 10. So shortcut speed dials that you can have on your mobile phone.
I had to think very carefully about mine.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Now, have you ever had to explain it to anyone? Why aren't I on your speed dial? Why am I sitting at number 3, not number 1?
Well, and how did you choose them? Were they chosen for political reasons or were they chosen purely for your own practical reasons?
Well, you see, I'm not going to reveal what they are, but in my particular case...
She listening.
Because I'm using an iPhone... And the way I hold it, and other people might hold their phones differently, but I've actually put the ones that are more important at the bottom where my thumb can get at them more easily without having to stretch.
That's good.
Oh, that's a good excuse.
Yeah. No, it's real.
I must admit...
Yeah, you're in number 9. That's the most important position. Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
And there is no number 10 in my case. But...
Can I offer a different explanation?
Yep.
On Android... There's a favourites tab in your dialer. So you have your dialer and your call log and your contacts. And then there's a favourites tab. And that the favourites list is created dynamically by the phone. So depending on how many incoming or outgoing calls you make to particular numbers.
So Rick from the football club's at number 1.
He's right up the top there. The list is always changing. So my wife's at number 1. Other people in this room.
Politically correct answer.
Yeah, that's a good answer, isn't it? When the other people in this room are in the top 5.
According to that, you ring yourself a fair bit.
I do. I ring myself a lot. I'm a lonely, lonely man, Justin. That's another way that the Android operating system works. Dynamically creates the most popular list.
Whilst we're talking about Androids, and we haven't even started on the rundown yet, let's do it out of order just to mix things up a bit tonight. Mr. Schmidt, Eric Schmidt, he is the... Eric? Is this Eric? I've got to remember his first name.
Yep.
He's the boss at the Google organisation that's looking after Android stuff. And he says that the Android adoption is about to explode. During Google's third quarter... earnings conference call that they had just recently, the strategy is starting to pay off. This is with the Android sort of stuff that's going to roll out, not only into mobile phones, but further into, as you discussed this evening, Dr. Ron, with the Chrome operating system.
Mm.
So they're obviously gearing up for a bit of growth in this area. Google is teasing at what may be a store. So there's going to be Google Store because everyone else has got one. It's about time Google had one, I guess. Maybe watch this space and see what happens with the Android when she comes online.
So there's going to be a store.
The Android adoption thing. So what are you up to, Cupcake, now?
Other than the Android market.
Yeah, okay. It'll be a Google market. I don't know what they sell, T-shirts, coffee cups.
Hmm.
all sorts of things like that. So there you go. Now, another interesting news too. Thanks to GD, who is one of our regular contributors. He obviously had a quiet day at the office the other day and filled up my mailbox, like I think he probably filled up everybody else's, with some very interesting stories. One of them, which caught my eye, was the Italian city of Venice is rolling out citywide Wi-Fi. What a good idea.
Well, they probably can't do cable. It'd be under the water.
Well, they'd be submarine cables, wouldn't they? Oh, no, they could. At least you wouldn't have backhoes digging them up over there, surely.
No, you'd have people gondolas sticking gondola going through pole them. Things into right. them, yeah.
Gondola pole.
What do you there's call
a,
it, the thing?
There's a Monty Python sketch for you. There gondolas, gondolas, and more gondolas. Remember that one? No. Okay. The Italian city of Venice has launched what is believed to be the most extensive wireless internet system anywhere in Europe. 10,000 kilometres of cables have been laid. There you go. They laid them. They did lay them. Establishing Wi-Fi hotspots just about everywhere in the city. The authorities spent around $15 million. That's about 9 million euros building up the system. It's fast, between 20 and 100 megabits per second. And for those who live there, it's totally free. But if you're a tourist, $7 a day. Known for its ancient museums, art galleries and canals, Venice's mayor says the system will enable the development of e-commerce and cable television. Oh, talking about cable television on
there
wireless.
There won't be much bandwidth by the end of that.
Absolutely. Places like San Francisco, Singapore and Stockholm are already amongst the best connected cities. Now, Venice is showing off its new internet capabilities, merging computers and culture in this unique setting. What a good idea. I wonder if someone will do it here in this country. Do you reckon? Or is it just flash in the pan stuff?
It's a very good idea. There's wireless hotspot type networks around, but you have to pay for them.
Everybody in this country wants to get their 5 cents worth out of
they
it.
They do.
All the telcos, evenly, across the field. So it'd be really good if they actually come out. Because it'd be good, wouldn't it? You'd be just wirelessly connected as you motor around. But is it because we're high adopters, maybe? Maybe they're all going, oh, no, too much bandwidth. And they're not going to let us do it. I don't know what the Venetians are like when it comes to doing mobile broadband. Be good for Skype.
Mm.
Maybe that's the threat. They'll do all their telephony over
free
mobile.
Calls to everybody.
Absolutely. Use a Skype client on your, whatever it is, your PDA or the likes.
So people are putting more of their effort here into mobile broadband networks, aren't they?
They are.
But rather than investing heavily in Wi-Fi networks.
But even then, you look at, I don't know, I think our wireless network's still a little bit left behind. Sorry, our mobile network's left behind compared to the rest of the world. Like I think you mentioned in the news tonight too, about things like positioning of, you know, calls from cells, why that sort of all doesn't happen. Because technically there's no reason why it can't, is there? Yeah. Anyway. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, JD, Graham and myself, Andrew. We're going to have a drink break and we'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Tell us about your new toy. This is
the one that occupies
the
room.
This is gadget of the year, this one.
I just want to click an Xe and have this work.
So you've got a workaround for the Android market now for your Androids.
How long is that in viewing time?
About 84 minutes.
The only option is to buy it outright then.
It is, it really is.
So you unplugged all the fax machines? Yeah, go on.
I tell you though, that you've got to be careful doing that. Some people get very narky.
Internet villain of the year.
And the moral of the story is backup.
Backups, for goodness sake. This is along the lines of the AFL with drug cheats, isn't it?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Oh, yes, you are.
Welcome back. When you're ready, son.
Sorry, are you used to these new programs? Hi, D-Link. Yeah. Sorry, I just pushed the buttons here. Hey, I as per normal with a lot of Australians, every 10 years you go through that cycle of renewing your passport.
Ah, yes.
I got my new one today. It's got this solid thing in the middle page. It's
You've got
like
your chip card.
Ah, is that what it is? Because I held it up to the light, like Dr. Ron said.
Yep.
And you could see things inside there. I go, oh, I wonder what's in there.
And it says, don't remove this page.
That's right. Or don't stamp on it or do anything like that.
Do not place in microwave oven.
And don't put it. Leave it in your jeans when you wash when you're in another country.
Not for protection against the hurricane.
Absolutely. Yep. But JD, you travelled recently. Now you've got one of these.
I got my passport renewed last week, or the week before, so I could travel.
Must be the season for it.
It must be. So the e-passport, and it was really great. I got back to Australia, and there was this huge queue of people waiting at customs. So I thought,
does this get you through the queue faster?
It does.
Oh, even better.
So I've got the webpage up now, which is at the customs website, so customs.gov.au. And the SmartGate system, when you re-enter Australia, basically you get your passport, it shows you what to do on the little kiosk, but you open it to your photo page, you slide it in, it reads who you are from your chip, and then you get a ticket, a bit like a parking ticket with an electronic strip on it.
With a fine with it.
Yeah, that's the one. So you walk up then to the actual exit gate and you put your electronic card in, the one that the SmartGate's just issued you, which I think is time-stamped so that you can't hang around too long.
Yep, yep.
And then you basically stand facing at the camera at the gate you're about to walk through.
Well, they take a photograph of you.
Till it says you're ready, and it basically compares, I presume, your image.
Oh, I can see it on the website. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah. So it compares the photo it's taking of your face to the one that's recorded in your passport. If you look the same, it says no worries, come through.
Is it a bit like the cone of silence and the nets in Maxwell Smart's house? If you look up above the
it is a bit like that.
Is it? You wonder what's going to fall from the roof if I don't match.
So I bypassed the queue of a couple of hundred Aussies coming back in back in home. It didn't help with the baggage coming off the carousel.
Oh, didn't it? No. It's even got little footprinty things that you've got to stand on. Obviously that's yes. Where the camera's depth of field is and all that sort of stuff.
So you had no human interaction going through immigration?
Well, that would be wrong to say. There were lots of staff directing people to, here's the kiosk and how to use it, and Here's where to stand, and off you go, gentlemen.
Are there a lot of...
But you didn't have a customs officer
but I didn't
actually
need to talk
looking...
To anyone. No.
That's good. Mm. No one actually had to look at your passport and look at the photo.
You had nothing to declare, obviously.
That's right.
No sheep with
no
you.
No sheep, no. No, no wooden products. No I learned that last time I came back.
I think I came back from Europe one day. I brought a rock that nearly hit me on the head from Mount Etna when I was standing in a Sicilian little place, and... I thought, oh, I better do the right thing. I'll declare that I've got a rock. And yes. When I declared it, they came out of nowhere in customs and wanted to quarantine and have a look. And they were all disappointed. It's just a rock. It's sentimental to me. It nearly hit me on the head because I was on a volcano when it went kaboom. Anyway, that was just my story.
And that was it? You lost that?
No, they let me keep it.
Oh, wow.
They were actually quite disappointed. They were looking forward to something. And I said, it's brand new. It just popped out of the earth not so long ago.
Ah.
And I think they came to the conclusion that there couldn't be anything nasty in it. So obviously it's been just cooked.
Yeah, because there's nasty things in soil
that's what they'd be worried about.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they let me have it. I've still got it to this very day. I think my kids play with it. It's a very sharp, pointy thing, too. Mm. Anyway.
Volcano.
All right. Well, that's good. There you go. That was a little bit about new passports. I'm very excited. Got mine today in the mail. It only took, they're not bad, the DFAT people.
Turn around in a week.
Yeah. Yeah, about that. It was pretty quick. I guess you might have put a new, because I'm not planning on traveling till April next year. So mine, I just went through the normal ring. But if you had to sort of want to expedite the process, because you can fill that out on your form. And you can do it all online, too.
I did it online, yes. And
yeah,
then when I went to the post office to submit the forms and put in my new ugly-looking photo...
you had to look like a criminal? That's what the woman said to me when I had my photo taken. You look like a criminal.
Yeah. Bit like I do on the web at the moment with the Ustream. and she said, well, you're leaving in 2 weeks' time. This will be in plenty of time. Don't pay the extra fees. And she was right. It came in 10 days.
Wow. That's impressive. $208 it costs for a 10-page passport these days.
It wasn't exactly cheap, no.
No. It's not bad. That's about $20 a page.
My advice for what it's worth is don't let them lapse. If you've got a passport and it's about to expire...
No, you can let them...
12 months grace.
You, 2 years, in fact.
2 years?
Oh, 2 years. You've got 2 years grace now. It gets... Every year that goes past, it gets a tad harder. You know, I'm thinking, oh, here we go. Birth certificates.
I had one where it was more than 12 months when you had to renew it within the 12 months, I think, and I didn't. And, talk about jump through hoops. I thought it would have been much easier just to pay the damn fee. And
I never got a letter. Maybe I moved. No, I haven't moved in that time. But no, it was good. I've done it now. It's all good. All rigid. Now, let's talk about Freeview. Well, let's not us talk about Freeview. Let's Adam Turner talk about Freeview. Now, are you familiar with what that is?
Freeview is television that we've always had.
Don't believe a word of it.
It's that bucket.
The bucket?
That bucket that he slapped a label on.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Now, Freeview is the consortium of the commercial free-to-air TV stations who have somehow managed to trick the SBS and the ABC into becoming part of, in lieu of the competition, I guess, of the cable TV providers and things like that.
And having just been in New Zealand, they've got Freeview over there as well, but of course it's a different product, but it's still called Freeview.
Yeah. Mm. The next big thing which we've all got to worry about from a consumer point of view is the anti-siphoning regulations. Are you familiar with that and what that is?
No.
Okay. At the moment, we have sport on free-to-air. Say, for example, the cricket over the summer, or the footy, the grand final footy, for example. And at the moment, there's a law which says that consumers must be able to have access to this free of charge. That's why it's on commercial free-to-air
events.
Television.
There's a list of protected events that free-to-air have to be offered.
That's right.
Iconic things.
Exactly. Yeah. And that list is going to be gazumped fairly shortly. And that's the reason.
Up for review, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is where they reckon, this is why they call it anti-siphoning. It stops pay TV pulling those events into being a paid environment.
Is this why there's that big propaganda campaign at the moment? Or which is what we're about to find out from Adam, is it?
No.
There's commercials on TV at the moment saying, we need to have sport on...
Keep sport
free. Yeah, keep sport free.
Yeah, that's the same mob. Free TV Australia.
Yeah, okay.
They're the people
that's where they're coming from.
I even know their address, 44 Avenue Road, Mosman, 2088, because I've sent them a lot of propaganda in recent times. But no, the girls that I deal with up there, that's the same place where you get a television commercial approved to run to air.
Ah.
It needs to be censored and it goes there as well, so... But, yeah, it's the same mob doing all that sort of stuff. But anyway, Adam Turner, he can tell you the lowdown on what's going on with the Freeview side of things from his point of view.
After deliberately confusing Australians over the nature of Freeview, Freeview Australia has mounted a legal attack on Devico for using the Freeview UK logo. The Australian Freeview campaign has been built around fear, uncertainty and doubt. Rather than offering consumers a wide range of new services, it's basically a rebranding of existing services designed to trick and scare people into buying Freeview branded equipment that doesn't allow ad skipping or recordings to be easily copied off the device. Naturally, there has been some confusion with the Freeview UK campaign, not helped by the fact Freeview Australia adopted an almost identical logo. In Australia, the Freeview campaign has benefited from such confusion, as people assumed the local service would match the breadth of the UK offering. Meanwhile, Devico has been selling its Tivex range of personal video recorders for several years. Admittedly, they might not be the best PVRs on the market, but their key strength is flexibility. They're also one of the few devices to work with Australia's ICE TV electronic program guide, which was recently forced to fight off a legal challenge of its own from the Nine Network. As a product available in many countries, Devico's Tivex range naturally displays the Freeview UK logo. It's certainly not the only digital television equipment on sale in Australia to display the Freeview UK logo. After the Australian launch of the latest Tivex PVR last week, Freeview Australia has the nerve to demand that Devico remove the Freeview UK logo from its packaging. Devico has not licensed the Freeview Australian logo, nor is it likely to, considering it will be forced to disable many of its best features in order to get Freeview Australia certification. This still doesn't give Freeview Australia the right to demand Devico remove the Freeview UK logo, considering Devico's PVRs are compliant with the Freeview UK system. Freeview Australia deliberately created confusion around the Freeview branding, and it's now using this confusion to harass vendors such as Devico. Sources tell me Devico is yet to decide whether to remove the Freeview UK logo from its packaging and materials. This latest attack in Freeview Australia's FUD campaign is yet another reason for Australians to ignore the Freeview logo when they go shopping for digital television gear.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So what's in a logo? Heaps, apparently.
Mm. So they've deliberately chosen a name that's used in other places.
No.
Then they're complaining that, yeah.
This manufacturer that Adam speaks of has actually, just because they're already selling that box into the UK market, why take the UK logo off?
Well, that's right.
And the local markets cracked the sads about it and said, naughty.
When the Australian mob were choosing their name and their logo, they would have known that that Freeview name was used in other places.
Yeah.
And yet they've deliberately chosen to use a name that's in use in other places to cause confusion.
Probably.
And then they're complaining when there's confusion caused.
Yes. So what was it like in New Zealand, JD? Were they flogging it? Like, was it, you know, because it's relatively well entrenched over there from what I can understand, isn't it? Freeview over
there? It was, to be honest, I was in a hotel, so I had cable in there and it had a couple of the New Zealand TV stations, 1, 2, 3 and Prime. And there were some ads there occasionally for Freeview boxes. And that's pretty much all I really saw.
Okay, excellent. All right, so there's a little bit of heads up on Freeview. Thank you, Adam, for that. And if you'd like to contribute, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. They're actually, what are they talking about at the moment? Dr. Ron, you're getting hugs from Thaddeus.
No,
what does that mean?
I'm hugging. He needs a hug.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Oh, you're hugging.
He's got confused by the daylight saving.
He's confused because it's different time zone.
Oh, he's joined us later.
He's joined us late. He thought he was on time at halfway through the show, and he's not.
Who is this? That is. Yes. You'll have to use your PVR and rewind a little bit, or download the podcast.
Download the podcast
if I get the links right this week.
I'll be there tomorrow morning.
Yeah, good.
I
forgot about that. And Western Australia is now 3 hours different then, if that's the case, because they voted no for daylight saving. So. Isn't that 3 hours over there?
Yeah.
WA?
It will be, yeah.
In their movement to preserve their colour and their curtains or whatever it is they do.
Keep the cows up.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff.
Keep the cows up.
Come and talk to us live, chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Windows 7 release may test Apple's winning streak.
Oh, the rundown.
Yeah, the rundown.
Oh, hello.
That's the top nine, top item there too, by the way.
Item two. Yeah.
Apple's Mac computers have steadily gained market share over the years, a winning streak that may be tested in the next few weeks with the launch of Microsoft's Windows 7 operating system. Few expect the new system to dent Apple's standing in the market in the long run, given the company's premium position and the fact that its dedicated user base largely ignores events in the Windows universe. Too true. They do, don't they?
They do. Yeah.
They do.
Thank you.
I think... And this is just my personal opinion, that the Apple market is well and truly entrenched, and nothing anyone can say or do will actually budge them, because they like their die-cast aluminium
Woolworths.
No, not even Woolworths. Not even a flinch of Woolworths.
All right.
But I don't know. What do you think? And apparently some of the analysts are warning that Windows 7, which has got strong early reviews about being good, and I'm using it here, and I have been using it for a while, like Graham has.
Yep.
I found it to be flawless. I really like some of the great little... I'm finding new things out about it each and every day that it does, and you go, oh, that's pretty cute. As for Leopard, well, I haven't heard many Snow Leopard reports lately, but anyway, it's going to be talk of the town very shortly on the 22nd of October. Watch out. Twitter, they're going to use Twitter. They're going to use Facebook. The big parties in Sydney. I got invited to it. Are you going, Dr. Ron? I think Adam's going
on
their behalf.
I got an invitation, yeah. I think Adam's representing the team.
Adam's going up there because they're... bought him a plane ticket, so that's good. So, yeah, it's all on for young and old up there in Sydney on October 22nd. Do we get it before everybody else does? Actually, the New Zealanders
will get it first.
They can pop into their local store and go for gold. But, it'd be interesting to see. But, yeah, anyway, so what do you reckon? Do you think Windows 7 is going to shake the Apple tree?
I think that what will happen is that the Macs will continue to the Mac market will continue to grow. There's a lot of entrenched Mac users. The publishing company, the graphics people, the artist type people who tend to be Mac, the Mac stronghold, are not going to take any notice whatsoever of what happens to Windows 7, and the Mac market will still grow. But what will happen is there'll be a temporary sort of adjustment in the figures, because I think what's been happening in the last 12 months, maybe even longer, is that a lot of PC users have been holding off upgrading. I think there's been a real slowdown in
new sales
of PCs, because no one really wanted to move to Vista.
You'd only buy if you absolutely had to, wouldn't you?
That's right, yeah. A lot of people have bought lower-end PCs with XP on or kept their old PCs going, and they're just waiting for, something better to come along.
I'm definitely in that category.
Yeah, and I know quite a lot of other people who are, and I suspect that there's going to be a big surge in selling new PCs, in selling PCs with Windows 7 on, pre-installed. And that will shift. It'll make the market appear to shift for a short time, and it'll all go back to normal after a little while.
One thing I've noticed in having run both versions, both flavors of Windows 7, that's the 32-bit and the 64-bit version, the same problems with Vista 32, and well, not so much problems, but the same traits that each operating system has is reflected in the 32-bit. In Windows 7 and the 64-bit in Windows 7 when it comes to drivers and things like that.
In that 64-bit drivers for things are a little bit less well-developed.
Like they were in the Vista versions.
Exactly,
Same thing in the Windows 7 version. So I don't think it's operating system related. It's more like here and now, like there's not that many drivers. And
now, as for the operating system itself, though, how does the 64-bit version, does it perform...
The main thing about 64-bit, it breaks that 4 gig memory related issue that you've got, so you can actually start using all those slots in your PC for memory. But other than that, unless the application is specifically written to take advantage of those bigger areas to work in, then you're not really going to notice that much difference.
And Windows 7.
And that's just a matter of time. And as you've said, when people buy new hardware to go with a new operating system, it'll become commonplace and people will start writing software to use all of those.
Absolutely. And it's applicable to both platforms, Mac and PC. No,
that's
not one or the other. It's just 64-bit environment. It's just, yeah, the operating systems are new in that genre. So,
but it's the original question, it's unlikely that Windows 7 will change the Mac purchasing profile greatly.
I don't think it will in a bit.
You can actually run Windows 7 on an Intel Mac anyway already. There are quite a few people that, developers in particular, that have actually purchased Apple laptops because they like the build quality and so forth, and they're running Windows on them without any Mac operating system.
Do you think that's a big part of the market, or is that...
It's part of the market. I wouldn't say it's a big part.
No.
But also people that are attracted to the other technologies. So the iPhone, the iPods when they originally came out, attracted people across to the platform because they liked the stuff, they were in the shop, the machines do look pretty good, and so people have bought the suite of products, and I guess that's how I got sucked in many years ago.
And your iPhone and your iPod and all that just work so flawlessly, so seamlessly with your Macintosh, don't
they? That's right. So provided Apple can come up with other products that meet the current market demand, so the tablet's in the rumour mill still, various other things. So if Apple keep up with the consumer products that attract people to their computer platform, then the Mac market share will continue to bubble along as it has.
Yep. It's interesting, now we're talking about Apple. I get asked on numerous occasions about buying phones for corporate use, for business use. You know, will a Mac work well on it? Or what's the best phone to buy for a... You know, for Outlook and
stuff
like that.
Yeah, should
I
buy an iPhone or shouldn't I?
Exactly. Now, to me, the answer's been pretty straightforward in recent times because Apple and Microsoft just don't normally talk that well together, whereas anything else, like even the Windows mobile stuff, is obviously a better option if you're using a pretty much a PC-based system in the office.
I don't know that that's true. The current iPhones talk very nicely to your Exchange server.
Directly
if you're
to Exchange or, yeah, in fact, sync, okay, with Outlook.
As, yeah. Otherwise.
And the other thing, too, is the new version of the operating system, 3.1.2, I think it is, for the iPhone, according to Brian in our office, has fixed all of his problems.
Oh, that's good.
Which is good. So, because I think they had issues where it was baseband stuff that was being altered when loading up.
Well, you can hack that again now.
Yeah, good. Yep. Exactly. That's what you want. The reason why I was going to talk about that, Apple expands e-commerce on the iPhone. And it's basically what they've done is the guys at Cupertino have begun to allow in-app transactions for fee applications on its iPhone and iPod Touch handsets. The company said that developers would be allowed to perform transactions within free applications offered through the company's Apple App Store. Previously, transactions had only been available in paid applications.
Yeah, so this is a feature that was announced quite some time ago. So you've always been able to buy an application, for the last few years anyway, you've been able to buy an application and then purchase from within that application. So you can buy extra game packs or extra songs or extra whatevers for the program. And now they're doing it for applications you can get off the iTunes App Store for free. So no upfront cost. But then you download the application and it then charges you for things. Now, there's a couple of traps in this, and one notable one in the article that we're referencing is a GPS turn-by-turn navigation system that's 99 cents to download.
And they charge you per turn, do they?
And then once you've downloaded, it's $10 a month.
Oh, nice. That's a good
to
little
to keep it running.
Yeah, good.
What do you get for your $10 a month?
Do they update the maps for you?
I presume they update the maps, but it just keeps working whilst you pay your subscription, and when you don't, it stops working.
Still pretty X-y for just map updates, isn't it?
Now, is this what you're talking about when it pay-as-you-go? Is that the same sort of
same thing?
That's the iPhone App Store?
So the pay-as-you-go article is all about having subscriptions within the application itself. So not through Apple, directly to the...
Third-party vendor,
exactly right.
Well, that's probably a good idea, except if they're going to slug you for maps or something like that down the track.
Hmm.
Or a per-use type sort of thing. All right, in other interesting news this week, which I thought was about time, Twitter, because I'm a Twitter user. I've seen your pictures, Dr. Ron, that you put up on TwitPic, which is the visual version.
It's a lot of fun.
Twitter.
It's good fun, I reckon.
You've been going through Costco going, gee, they've got everything in here, and there's blurry photographs of Dr. Ron
going
through.
They've got everything in this
mall. Anyway, Twitter has started rolling out its new Lists feature, which is something which has been great. It'll let you organize your users and their contacts into groups and keep people closely updated with selected accounts of their choice. So you can actually start grouping things all together in a list. So you can have a Tech Talk list. I'm assuming. Haven't played with it yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
So does that mean that when you tweet, you say, I want this tweet to go to this list or all
lists? I'm assuming so. It's in beta at the moment. I haven't played with it yet, not unless someone else out there has.
Oh, so you don't need to put a whole lot of ats in. You can actually send it to one of your local lists.
I think that's the way it works. Right. Users can also make their lists private, which is even better if you want to use a work type sort of thing, or you want to, like a school group or something like that. You can keep it private.
Yep.
If they don't want others, obviously, to know about their organisation or their contact base, more importantly, because obviously it's obviously going to propagate out the contact base and you'll be able to see it. So anyway, at the moment, most Twitter users will not be able to see the new feature. I'm included in that. Unless you're part of a small group which is doing beta testing, not unlike Wave, probably a lot smaller than Wave. But anyway, and now the Tech Talk Wave's going tonight, according to Warlock.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good. If you've got Wave access, jump in and say g'day, because he's there, I think, as we speak. So, yeah, what do you reckon? Lists. Is that going to be
Sounds like a good idea.
I reckon it's good. I'm looking at the Twitter official Twitter blog at the moment. I'm just trying to search for a bit of an update about it. I heard about this lists feature some weeks ago, but as you say, Andrew, it's in beta at the moment, I think, and there are people that are actively testing it, putting it through the hoops, but it's not available to the general populace at the moment. Soon to launch, says the blog, lists.
Beta.
The project leader there has just put a bit of a post up. It's a new feature we're testing with a small subset of users. The idea is to allow people to curate lists of Twitter accounts. For example, you could create a list of the funniest Twitter accounts of all time, athletes, local businesses, friends, or any compilation that makes
sense. You can have a Tech Talk list.
Yeah.
You can tweet to those interested.
They're public by default. They can be made private, as you said. Okay. There you go. If you want to have a look at some more information, if you go to blog.twitter.com and search for lists, and you can see all of the information there about them.
Now, speaking of Twitter, the police are going to be watching Twitter and Facebook for Muckup Day, which is coming up fairly shortly.
So Muckup Day is a bit
like when you get out there and say, I'm not going into work today because my boss has got a, whatever, and your boss reads it. This is the same sort of thing.
Bad.
Yeah. If you're that way inclined on Muckup Day, just keep off the social networking sites.
So Muckup Day is what all the school kids do on their last day of year 12.
Yeah, it's when we used to go to school. I think they called it HSC, didn't it, back then? Yeah, and it's what you did when you no more school, no more books, no more teachers and all that sort of stuff.
So that's in Victoria, is it, Muckup Day?
I think it's national. Probably global, actually.
I think different places have different times, though, school terms. So.
But here in Australia, it's the end of the secondary school lifespan of the moth.
Why are the police watching? Are they worried that people are going to break the law?
Well, police will check social networking sites to detect plans for antisocial or illegal stunts. That's why they're looking at it.
Now, is this in Victoria or Queensland? Because Queensland's got quite a problem with...
We're referring to Camberwell, just down the road from us here in the studio.
Okay, then.
The traditional Muckup Day monkey is still used by many students, has been rebranded as Celebration Day, because it obviously connotations there of Muckup Day. Security will be stepped up at secondary schools across Victoria, with about 50,000 VCE students set to let their hair down and everything else down after 13 years of study. Senior Sergeant Tim Hardiman of the police unit said social networking sites were another tool for authorities. So if you're planning on doing something, let's meet under the Westgate Bridge with some spray cans with whatever. Don't
put it on Facebook.
Don't do it, JD.
Okay.
Just don't. So there you go. Another good use of social networking, what not to do and all that sort of stuff. Now,
but you can still egg the headmaster's car.
Oh, can you?
Written, spoken, and authorised by Dr. Graham.
You'll be cleaning up the mess, Graham.
You can't email him because he's blown up, so that's all right.
That's it.
Now, other interesting news too this week. There was a headline. It said banks report 70% of phishing attacks are hosted offshore. And I sort of turned it around and said that means 30% are hosted within Australia. What's going on here? If people are going to hijack bank transactions and 30% of them are with Australians, why aren't we doing anything about it?
That's really surprising, isn't it?
Mm.
I wouldn't have thought there would be.
Well, representatives from Australia's largest four banks have told a Senate inquiry into cybercrime that 70% of them are offshore, appearing before this senator's panel in Sydney last week.
I would have thought 99.99% of them would have been offshore.
How can they survive in Australia?
Between the lines, I think they're talking about phishing attacks that have been targeted at Australian banks. 30% originate from here and 70% are from offshore.
And one would imagine if they know that 30% are onshore, they're probably actually doing something about it because they've been able to trace them. Otherwise, you wouldn't know that they were from Australia, would you?
You wouldn't know to be able to compile the statistics. That's right, yeah.
But I just find that amazing that 30% are within the, you know, within the country. That's a gutsy call trying to do all that sort of stuff, because you're not dealing with the tyranny of distances and different policies and different police forces and different judicial systems around the world, are you? You're here in Australia, so
yeah.
I just thought that was a pretty that stood out for the 30% that was occurring in the country.
You'd be a brave ISP in Australia who would host that. Who would host the?
Oh well, that's all under the Microsoft too at the moment with iiNet and the copyright stuff. That's just, you know, we'll wait and see what happens with that. That's going gangbusters in the courts at the moment, so it's probably not an opportune time to talk about it. But yes,
I wonder if the 30% that are hosted in Australia are not actually intentionally hosted in Australia. They're like sites that have been hacked and got the phishing stuff put on them.
Yeah,
well, that's a possibility.
And malware is going to. Apparently, the malware's up with Microsoft's Outlook at the moment too. They're a big.
Yeah, I saw something about that. Yeah, but then Outlook's always under attack.
It's on every
priority target number one.
Well, because it's so well and truly entrenched, isn't
That's it? That's
it.
Yeah.
Here we go. I've got it here. Massive attack launched against Microsoft Outlook. This is from WebSense. They warned that a massive attack is basically targeting the Web Access Service, which is the remote service when you dial in.
Outlook Web Access is where you access the Outlook Exchange.
Oh, that's not really Outlook. That's
it's a web service.
That's Exchange and IIS.
When you want to come in remotely from home and log into your office email and check it out.
And lots more people are doing that now that they've got nice, fast ADSL2 connections to their businesses.
Yep. Some of us have.
Yeah.
The company said that it was receiving around 30,000 emails a day, which urged users to visit a website and download a security update file, which, in fact, you guess it, contains malware. They're just targeting.
There's been some very sophisticated phishing emails going around that talk about your server at your office is being updated, and it looks like it come from your own tech people, and it's got your domain name in it, and it's got netadmin@yourcompany.com.au, and directs you to go and download a certificate update or something like that to install, and it's very convincing. I've had people
who've seen it, have you?
I've seen it, and I've had people who normally wouldn't get tricked by that sort of thing actually forward it to me and say, "Is this legit or not?" So it's one of those ones where they've gone that step further. They've personalized the attack to the degree that it's people are believing it. It's a bit scary. Don't trust links in emails. You can never trust links in emails.
No, but that's a good idea. Is ask your local IT guru. If in doubt, ask.
Always check with your network guy at the office.
That happens in the office on a regular basis. One of my colleagues deals with eBay. He has something up online which he sells, and he gets the phishing spam every day. He goes, "Oh, this looks legit. What do you reckon?" I said, "No, no."
Look, the other thing is, where you can. Train the people around you. The people listening to this show, most of us know how to read a URL, how to read a web address. And you know that in between that double slash and the first slash, you've got to read it from right to left. So you start with the AU, and then you've got the .com, and then you've got the name of the company. And it goes backwards in order of sort of importance from the right to the left. So if it says, www.techtalkradio.com.au.something-else.something-else.cn
xxx.dancinggirls.ru
That's right. Then you're not, even though it says www.techtalkradio at the start, because at the right-hand end of it, it doesn't say Tech Talk Radio, that's not part of the Tech Talk Radio website. It's trying to trick you. Now, if we can teach people to read URLs and to understand the way the links are put together, then we can recognise a lot of these phishing scams just straight off. You can see the address. Nah, that's clearly false.
If the mobile phone survey that Microsoft did is any indication as to the ability of some Australians to deal with this sort of technology, I think it's going to be a bit of a losing battle. Don't want to sound like a pessimist there, but at the bottom line is that there's a lot of Luddites out there, Graham.
There are. And
look at them in my family. Woof.
I know, but you know, where we can, we've got to try and spread a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of intelligence to the way we look at these things.
Graham's right. They're getting more and more convincing and harder to spot. Magoo in the chat room says, personally, these days I look for the green SSL marker. Now, Graham, in Internet Explorer and other web browsers, there's a green marker. That's probably a good description next to the title bar, isn't there? It lights up green if the site is verified independently.
In the old days, we used to look for a gold padlock. Now, what they've done now is not only do you get the gold padlock, but they actually have a system to check out that the gold padlock means it's secure, that the link is from one end to the other, no one in between can see what goes on between you and the person and the web server you're talking to. But it doesn't necessarily guarantee that the web server you're talking to belongs to the company you think it does. So, you know, you might have a secure link, but to the wrong site.
Yep.
Now, what this green labeling in the... And it turns the address bar green in your web browser.
That's right.
Depending on what web browser you're using, it might do something different. But in IE, it turns the
title bar.
The address bar, green. Where not only is it an SSL secure connection to the server, but also it's checked out that the server is who it's pretending to be. So you can be a bit more confident that you're talking to the bank that you think you are and not to someone pretending to be that bank. So
Type the thing into your address bar and go there. Don't click links in emails. Goodness.
You'd never ever would click a link in an email to go to a...
Purporting to be from a bank or...
To a bank or anywhere where you log in and type a password. Doesn't matter whether it's a bank or not. The safest way is to type the address into the web browser yourself.
Mm. All right. Just before we go to the break, a message from Tim Berners-Lee. You know who he is?
He invented the World Wide Wait.
He's put a public apology up.
Has he?
Sorry for inventing it.
I saw this. No, that's not what he
says. Sorry.
If you let me finish, I can get the rest of it out before you all jump down and jump to conclusions. He said, sorry about the //, said Tim Berners-Lee. This is, in http://. The inventor of the World Wide Web, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, has admitted that he wished he'd never bothered with the // prefix in all website addresses. In an interview that he had with the New York Times, Tim said that the /// was a programming convention in 1989 when he first wrote the paper that led to the creation of the web, but that it turned out to be not really necessary. Thanks, Tim.
Well, I think it was put there to make the system as flexible as possible so that you could have a lot of different schemes for finding addresses for things. But, we've seemed to have settled on a select few, and, it does look a little bit redundant these days, but there was a good reason to put it there.
What does HTTP stand for?
Hypertext Transfer Protocol.
There you go. See, it's like FTP.
File Transfer Protocol.
Okay. See, look, he's onto it. He's good. That's why he's here on the panel, isn't it?
twice paid the big bucks.
Absolutely. So, but there you go. There's a little message from the person who's responsible for absolutely everything in this World Wide Web these days, Mr. Tim Berners-Lee. Mm. It'd be very interesting to have a chat to him down the track, wouldn't it? 1989.
Certainly would be. He'd have an interesting perspective on the way things like Eugene, put together.
Catch him in a bar somewhere. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Before we get to the rundown this week, Dr. Ron.
Oh, yeah,
it'll help keep you warm on a cold Melbourne night.
Now, they've actually been pulled off US telly.
So chances are it may be a nice marriage of technology and provider.
I'm fed up with this "you're not living in the right country" stuff on the internet. That's not the way the internet works.
Oh, well, you will work for the government. Yeah.
I'd be hoping they'd be refunding that pretty quick.
We're
smart.
In 3 meg hell, buddy. I'm on 8 meg.
16 or 17 megabits per second.
Suck it up, princess.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one-way technology radio show.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron has a fresh cup of coffee, and that's very impressive, Dr. Ron. You made that in about 10 seconds.
That was extremely quick, wasn't it?
No time for milk, though.
No time for milk.
No. I was very rude to you in that promo, Graham, wasn't I?
Yes.
I was listening to
you. Yes, I thought that before.
I was listening to you in the little...
In the kitchenette thing.
The kitchenette bit there. I thought, yeah, it's... You must have antagonised me.
Won't be the first time. Won't be the last either.
No.
Fingers
crossed. Yeah.
Anyway, hey, Acer is recalling overheating Aspire notebooks. It's Acer's turn this time. Sony had problems with exploding batteries and things like that, and recently with their...
No, that was Dell.
Yeah, but they were Sony batteries, weren't they?
Oh, Sony batteries. Beg your pardon. Yep.
So Acer recalls over Aspire notebooks that are getting a bit hot. So if your Acer's keeping your knees warm and then some...
Yes.
as Graham said in that promo, you might be a cause for concern. What are they saying here? The affected units are Acer Aspire models AS3410, 3810, 3810TG, any 3810 you might happen to have, any flavour thereof, manufactured prior to the 15th of September 2009. The problem appears to be an overheating microphone cable. Oh, you get them in here. to the affected units to eliminate risk of overheating. I don't know how microphone cable can affect
things. Does a microphone cable overheat?
I didn't think they were all that strongly powered. But
no, obviously not. So the company is asking people who own any Acer Aspire notebooks to visit their customer care website and tap in their serial number on the machine to see whether it needs to be serviced. And obviously, reading between the lines, they'll do it for you for next.
Mrs. Dr. Ron's got an Acer Aspire netbook.
Oh. You have to check whether it's on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what you do. Go to the website, whack in the good digits and see what happens.
Damn. All right.
Stephen Conroy, who is the Minister for the National Broadband Network.
How is he?
I don't know. He's been very quiet of late. Mm. He came out the other day and said there will be no delay. You can just imagine him standing up there going, no delay, as Mr. Conroy would. Anyway, apparently he's rejected plans and pleas from Telstra and shareholders to delay the passage of the legislation that's going to split up the telecommunications company. Because if you remember last week, Telstra had asked the Senate to basically say, hey, stop, let's deal with the NBN before we actually go about splitting the organisation in two. So anyway, yesterday, being last week, Telstra and several institution investors argued that the legislation would delay until after the NBN implementation study was complete. Mm. But I don't know. I still think it's a good idea to, split, but that's me. I just, my personal gut instinct is that...
Yeah, I think I'm on that side of the fence, yeah.
They're too big. They're too big, you know. Like, they hide behind this level of, you know, anonymity, and each finger in each department blames each other's finger in each other's department, and it's just hard.
Yeah, it should never have been privatized as such a wide-ranging organization from service provision through to, you know, physical infrastructure, pipes and cables and stuff. There should have been a split right back.
Some media commentators are saying back when Telstra, was privatised, that the government back in the time was a bit naff, a bit weak.
Yes, I agree totally. Yes, and that's when it should have been done.
Yeah, and so what Conroy's trying to do is roll back those decisions, decisions.
So when he says no delay, he's saying, well, it's only 20 years late already, so let's do it.
Yeah, too right. Well done. The CSIRO, remember a couple of weeks back where Microsoft and Intel and a few other major manufacturers got done for using the CSIRO's patented Wi-Fi technology?
Yeah, I think it was a bit longer than a couple of weeks back. Yeah, CSIRO won a series of court cases revolving around they had a patent on some of the technology that's used in Wi-Fi, in wireless networking.
Correct. They've released the amount of money that's gone into the skyrocket.
Whoa.
$200 million. That's not bad.
It's not bad. I thought it might have been more than that, to be honest.
It could easily have been a lot more than that, I think.
Yeah, but $200 million is still pretty good, I would have thought, for research and development into certain things. But yes, I agree with you. Considering some of the multinationals that were involved in that patent infringement, there was certainly more scope there.
Almost every major technology, you know, worldwide technology company
is
involved, yeah.
Yes. The press release doesn't go on to say just how much, if there's any further payments scheduled, but that's what they've accrued so far in the bank account. So anyway, that was a result earlier this year that 14 companies settled with the CSIRO under confidential terms.
Yep, which means we'll never really find out the full story.
No, but that's a good indication, I would have thought. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, what else has been happening in the world of technology this week? Intel takes an AMD antitrust battle to the US. Ooh. Now, this is, here we all go again.
It's going to get messy again, yep.
Yeah, Intel lawyers are suing AMD in the US. Now, AMD is a manufacturer of of the microprocessor.
Yes.
And Intel is their direct competition.
Intel and AMD both make the CPU chips, the chip that does the main calculating processing in the middle of your computer.
Yeah, now the thing which I saw, which was quite interesting, was the fact that Intel lawyers are suing AMD in the US as part of the chips firm's defense against antitrust case that's already been lost in Europe.
Mm.
So they didn't win it in one market, take their bat and ball, go to another market and try again. Is that fair? How would that affect global sales? How would that affect if you get a win in one country and you can still go and sell it back in another country and defeat the purpose of... seems a bit strange to me. But I don't know.
It is a strange old world in that legal environment.
So, and the other thing too, which I think we touched on briefly last week, which I have no further information on, was just the GPU issue with NVIDIA, and was it Intel?
Yeah,
it was. Because the GPU technology is leaps
which
and bounds.
Which is graphics processing in it, so it's the same sort of. Processing, calculating, do the adding up type chip, but instead of being the main one at the center of the computer. It's got its own intelligence on the graphics card that handles the display.
Hmm.
So that it can do things like have 3D graphics that don't load down your main computer. That works handed off to the graphics chip.
Now, the NVIDIA chipsets are well known, highly respected. They've been around for a long time.
Yeah, well known, highly respected in some circles and less so in others, perhaps.
Gamers love NVIDIA chipsets, don't they? I think gamers...
Yeah, but the GPU stuff, as Thaddeus has just said in our chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au, there is great scope for much faster applications using GPU technology as compared to CPU technology. Now, if you jump onto video thing?
YouTube?
That's the one. If you jump onto YouTube and have a look for GPU versus CPU and add Mythbusters to it as well.
Okay.
There's a fairly impressive example what Mythbusters do to demonstrate the difference in the two technologies. And once you've seen that, you'll have a thorough understanding of how it works. So it's laid out. I think Apple are right behind it too. Apple are very much a main player in the GPU technology. Would that be right, Joe?
Yeah, well, certainly the Snow Leopard's got in it technology to take care of multiple core processors. So that's part of the reason for upgrading to Snow Leopard.
I think that our CPU chips have kind of reached a speed plateau where they can't make them go any faster. So by having extra cores on the CPU, so in effect having more than one CPU in the machine, and having some of the work offloaded to other parts of the machine, like a graphics processing unit.
Graphics cards are becoming very big and chunky these days, aren't they?
Yeah, well, this is the way to make the machine seem faster because, just making the main
operating
CPU
system
faster
becomes faster. Yeah.
Takes a bit of the workload off the CPU, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Delegates.
Yeah, well, we can't keep going the way we were going to make it faster, so this is a different way to do it. And, of course, the new operating systems, Snow Leopard, no doubt, although I haven't seen it, but also Windows 7 Vista did this. Lots of visual effects, animation, see-through glass, windows and so on.
And also catering for much, much larger screens.
Yes, that's right, and much higher definition in the screens, much higher resolution in the screens.
Screens got so cheap lately. Have you bought one in recent times? I was in one of those people that sell 23-inch 1080i type screens, computer screens.
Yeah.
$198.
Yeah, I can believe that, because they're very popular, because that's the size that you buy when you buy a new PC these days.
Yes, and it's good to know that if you want to watch high-definition television on them, you want to buy one which is the same pixel size as a full HD screen and has an HDMI input, because then you can get your PVR or your set-top box.
So look for that magic figure, 1080.
Yeah. And you want 1920 across the top and 1080 down the side, and that'll give you true HD. Don't believe a word of it if it's not. It's like when you go into these white goods shops and they try and sell you a true HD monitor and it's not the same pixel ratio. Mm. No.
It's very worth doing your research and reading the relevant forums online. There's lots of people who give you the right advice. It's, these screens are amazing. And things like Foxtel have introduced, you can download your TV programs from Foxtel.
Heaven forbid, it's got to be better quality than what they pump up their cable.
It looks not too bad, actually.
Excellent. I haven't seen it yet.
On your computer screen.
I haven't seen it yet, but it's one of the reasons why I don't have those pay TV subscriptions, because the quality of the signal is just... Ooh.
So if you're a Foxtel subscriber, Graeme, you log on, do you?
You're a Foxtel subscriber, you can log on to their website, you put in your account number, you tick the box to say that you're authorised as the, to use that Foxtel account, and you download the... You can download the programs and watch it on your computer.
Is that for programs that have been to air that you've missed, or just anything?
No, it's programs that are on, that have been on air.
Part of their catalog.
It's similar to the ABC's iView service, but for the Foxtel pay TV service.
Okay,
I'm looking forward to my iView service at home. Hopefully tomorrow is the day when I get my...
When you get your ADSL working nice and fast.
When the man in the lifts some pits and tries to find the problem, so it'd be very interesting. Wi-Fi, which we spoke about just before, with the CSIRO winning a couple of mil, 200 mil to be precise. The Wi-Fi specification is going to start supporting peer-to-peer networking, which I thought, oh, that's interesting. I didn't think there was an issue for it already, but apparently it eliminates the needs for extra routers and things like that. But an emerging Wi-Fi specification is promising to allow users to directly link devices. So you can sort of like peer-to-peer across the device. Now, I'm not sure how this works.
Oh, so the network itself becomes transparent.
Yeah. I'm guessing that's the case. Dubbed Wi-Fi Direct, the new specification allows systems to establish peer-to-peer connections and directly connect with other devices without the need of a Wi-Fi router. Now, according to industry...
Isn't that what we used to call ad hoc Wi-Fi?
Yeah, I do it with my phone all the time.
Oh, there you go. According to industry group Wi-Fi Alliance, the new specification is likely to be formally certified by the middle of next year and will support connections between desktops, notebooks, printers, mobile phones and cameras, and as well as other common peripheral devices.
Perhaps the issue is that the ad hoc networks don't have high-level security, so maybe...
Maybe that's it.
Yeah, maybe it's same a level of security. It's a new way of doing that sort of connection, yeah.
Wi-Fi users worldwide will benefit from a single technology solution to transfer content and share applications quickly and easily amongst devices, even when a Wi-Fi access point isn't available. That's the ad hoc that you speak of,
yeah,
isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. So, anyway,
this deserves some further reading, and we will do so.
Yes. All right, in other interesting news, RIM, the makers of BlackBerry, are launching a new version. It's got a touchscreen. I wonder what they're trying to compete with. RIM, I think, may be feeling the pinch of the Apple iPhone. Anyway, Research in Motion launching a new version of the touchscreen Storm smartphone. Obviously trying to give Apple a run for its money. The Storm 2, as the device is known, is a bigger one for them. Apparently, the smartphone retains the original Storm's clickability type touchscreen interface, but improves upon features with faster typing and multi-touch capabilities.
Thought Storm was a Thugby team.
Yeah. Didn't they win something recently?
I don't know.
Go Storm.
Don't understand that game.
That's purple, isn't it?
Yeah, don't know.
They have purple uniforms.
Maybe RIM should support them.
Very spiffy.
Be a sponsor. Speaking of sponsors, hi, D-Link. What a segue. And a coronet your heart out. Details on the specific timing of the launch or on the pricing were not available yet. So it's going to be coming soon. Do you know anyone with a BlackBerry?
I know lots of people with BlackBerries.
What do they think?
Yeah, they like them. People who use them.
Yeah, BlackBerry people do like their BlackBerries. That's right.
Are they a bit like Apple iPhone users who like their iPhone?
Yes, very much so.
So they're a niche market and people just they gravitate towards them.
Well, no, I think what happens, in fact, is companies introduce them for corporate email, and that certainly happened in a company I'm involved with. And once people start using it, I think it is like the Apple iPhone. Once you start using it and you say, this is fantastic, you won't accept that there's anything else that might be the same or better.
Okay, so it just taints your thinking, does it? I actually...
Because it actually does the job quite well.
I will get an iPhone one day just so that I can say I've got one. And all these people that say, but you just don't like them. You're very anti those. I'm not. I will get one.
You'll be pleasantly surprised at how well it connects to your Exchange server and does your Exchange mail and all that stuff.
Okay, I'll get one tomorrow then. You've sold me.
And in the rumour mills, since we're talking about iPhones again, there's a application coming out from Apple to enable the built-in FM receiver.
Should I wait?
Oh, well, the built-in receiver's already there. They just haven't enabled it ever.
Oh, good. Mm. It's surpriseware. That's what Mac seem to be really good at.
They're good at that.
Didn't you say that there was some Bluetooth or some other features built into some of these devices that hadn't been turned on yet?
Yeah, I can't remember what it was. I think it was the iPod Touch that's been re-released has got extra stuff
in it.
Had
a Wi-Fi chip in it or something, didn't
it?
Yeah,
something like that. I can't quite remember now.
Mm.
Were you watching some wayward tweets yesterday from Kevin Rose on Twitter?
No.
About such things? Kevin Rose obviously being a very well-known net personality of Dignation fame. I'm just trying to find the ones that he was talking about.
Was he the guy that got into trouble on...
just met a drunk girl from Apple. No, it was about the Apple tablet. He was getting insider scoop here in a bar somewhere, I think. No Apple tablet coming. Well, we wouldn't call it a tablet. Ha-ha, good leak. Then someone said, ask drunk Apple girl when the iPod iPhone will get the FM chip wake-up updates. There you go.
Yeah.
Kevin said, buying her a shot, hopefully more soon. Then he said, expletive, she read the tweets, not even kidding, promised I wouldn't say who she is, lips sealed.
Oh dear.
Yes, there you go. So he was trying to ply her for information. But so you reckon, JD, you've heard that they're going to do the update to enable the radio chip?
There's a couple of rumour sites saying that they're working on an application right now.
Well, if it's built in, I would have thought, lay down Mazaire, really, isn't it? That turn it on at some stage?
The only thing that they've ever announced has got FM built into it is the new iPod Nano, which has just been released. So time is about right for them to come out and say, oh, well, guess what? We've got all these other products that do FM as well now.
Yes. Yes. That'd be good. You can listen to your local radio rather than download stuff and listen to your
CDs.
Or
having to stream it. Yeah.
Or having to stream it. Yeah. But that's got to be good if you're... put it this way, in our environment here where we have bushfire aplenty coming up to us very shortly, to be able to, if you're jogging along the track and you go, oh, there's smoke over there or whatever it is like that, you can tune into your local radio station.
What if you want to listen to AM radio, though?
Yeah, well, I'm an AM listener.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of my time on the AM band. Does it work there? Does a new touch work there? No?
I don't believe so. No, just FM.
Ba-bong.
Well, then maybe if the mountain won't come to Muhammad, the Muhammad should go to the mountain or something like that, and we could get all the AM broadcasters to get an FM translator somewhere in town. Because, like, what ABC Radio is the national broadcaster for being
I think
emergency
you're a,
stuff.
I think you're a technology behind. I think they leapfrogged that and went straight to digital.
Yeah, but you want to be able to get on the FM radio on your little device, don't you? I know, but still.
Yep. Nah.
No? Okay.
Digital is way of the future.
Now, JD, just briefly, Apple fixes Snow Leopard hard drive errors. Did you know about this?
I had heard something about this. Apple? I don't know about hard drive errors. I've heard about... logging
it's performance
in,
update or something.
Logging in as guest and then re-logging in as your own account and you lose all your data, something like that.
Really? Oh, I hadn't heard about that. Apple has released a performance update for a hard drive problem with its Snow Leopard operating system. The company said that a feature in Snow Leopard caused the hard drive to pause, which is probably problematic if you're streaming video or audio. Oh. Music just stops. The statement said that the problem affected only a small number of users. And then it goes down a list of swagger machines from MacBook Pros through to MacBook Airs and things like that. So,
right.
There you go. So you stick with us. You learn stuff.
So yeah, thank you. So that would just be a small patch into the I.O.
Well, one can only assume. One can only assume. So, and then the other interesting thing also while we're talking about Apple, they're tightening down on iPhone protections. Apple has reportedly added additional security protections to its iPhone 3GS designed to preventing the users modifying it. People like you.
Well, I didn't do it. I've just applied somebody else's work. Yes, so they've made a new version of the bootloader, which is the thing that you can hack.
Oh, okay.
So that when you turn the phone on, you can change the way it starts up.
Unjailbreakable.
Well, that's what they say.
Mm.
Have you got a 3GS yet, JD?
No, I don't. No, just a normal 3.
They're still too new. You know.
My phone's doing quite well. Don't need the extra speed yet. I'll do it one day.
You got a first-generation iPhone?
No.
The second one?
Second.
Mm. Should I get a third one? Or a fourth one?
Adam's got the first one because he brought it in here. Remember when it was first released?
Yeah.
We're all drooling over it. Going, wow.
David Jarmuni, a friend of mine, had one too.
I remember he brought that into the studio.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he tried to jailbreak and turn it into a brick or something at some stage in his life.
He bricked it.
Yeah, someone did.
You can fix those.
Well, that's good.
Like Android on them.
What? Not yet, but I dare say it'll come.
That'd be funny.
Someone will port Android
boot
to the
camp
iPhone.
For iPhone.
Yeah.
Boot camp. Load up your Android or something.
That's it,
pick
on
a,
your
pick
iPhone.
An operating system on your iPhone.
How cool would that be?
Absolutely. See, I just want to get it to tinker with it. Like,
you need an Android-enabled device. You'd like one of them, I reckon.
I would.
You'd have a lot of fun.
You're going to have more phones than you know what to do in a minute.
My latest craze, what I've been doing is going through SIP boxes. And the ATA is the little boxes which you connect to your internet to
analog get telephone adapter.
Yeah, voice over IP. They're fun to play with. You play with them, you can get all sorts of interesting gadgets in those things. And you can talk to the telephone exchange through it as well.
It's funny you should say that. I've put a request into Engine to unlock mine.
Yeah?
Yeah, they said, yeah, we'll do that for you, a bit reluctantly. I was expecting them to say there'd be like a $30 charge or something.
Oh, yeah, read those.
Yeah, but they didn't. They said, no, we'll do that for you. Why do you want it done? And I said, oh, well, I'd like to put in some... settings for another voice over IP provider just to do some tests. And they said, oh, okay, well, we can do that for you. It'll be a few working days. We'll set it up so that it
goes
unlocks
through
itself.
In their network updates or something
it
like
does.
That.
It does. It's interesting how it works. So that is actually hard-coded to go to a particular folder on a particular web server that they host, and they'll put a little file there to say unlock yourself next time it calls in and checks.
Yeah, and when you say unlock yourself, if you connect into it through a web browser, you find the IP address of it and try and connect in like you would a router or something like that.
I get a username and password prompt at the moment. I'm hoping that will disappear once it's unlocked.
Correct, and that's what I'm going to try and do too. So if it works for you, I've got about 3 Engine boxes I'll be ringing. But none of them are connected at the moment. I don't know whether that's a problem because... Yeah, I've got one.
You might have to
work.
Put them on the network to get them unlocked.
Maybe.
You can also ring into them with a telephone handset. Have you tried that?
Yeah, #34543 or something like that.
That's it. Yeah, you go *****, and you get a voice prompt that says configuration menu, and you can key numbers
in.
Wow. It actually reads you back like your IP address.
I have to play with one of these boxes.
Yeah,
that's what I mean.
They're the fun.
I didn't know
flavor
that
of the month with mine at the moment. They're a bit of fun. Get in and have a go.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Suffering Succotash, this has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
The 43-year-old claims he was looking for evidence of UFOs and aliens.
Well, did NASA get hacked as well?
Yeah, absolutely. No,
really?
If you need high speed and high quality at the same time, you need a much more powerful transmitter.
It automatically offered me the latest Optus configuration file.
How long did they take to get back to you? And how did they get back to you?
By the time you finished your cheeseburger, it was all too hard and you drove away.
That's right.
Somebody else in the world will have had the same problem.
Latitude's everything to me. Yeah. I like knowing Dr. Ron is at any particular hour of the day. Or my wife, for that matter. But they're both of them together.
Hang on a minute. What does that mean?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget is the Android-powered Motorola Droid smartphone. Have you heard about this?
Have you got one yet?
No, it's still vaporware, I think, but it's the rumours are escalating. Daily.
Has it got donut on it?
On a daily basis. Might have. Codenamed Shoals, S-H-O-L-E-S. The Motorola Droid is rumoured to soon be released by Verizon in the United States. Verizon running Google's open source Android 2.0 operating system, and it will be sporting a 5-megapixel autofocus camera. Reports are that it's slightly thicker than an iPhone 3GS.
Not as thin as some.
Not as thin as some, and that it includes a desktop cradle that turns the Droid into a glanceable display with weather and the like.
A what?
Glanceable, so you can glance down at it.
Oh, is it a bit like an iPhone display? It's glanceable.
Yeah, you can.
Can you not glance at the current Android machine?
I don't know. I don't know. Look, for more information, have a look at Engadget.com. That's our vaporware gadget of the week at this stage. The Android-powered Motorola, the Droid smartphone.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This week's website is www.ioseyeos.info. iOS is an open source web desktop. Following the cloud computing concept, leverages collaboration and communication among users. It's mainly written in PHP, XML, and JavaScript.
What?
It acts as a platform for web applications written using the iOS toolkit. So it includes a desktop environment. It has 67 applications and system utilities. It's also accessible by portable devices via a mobile front end. It's a lot of fun to have a play around with.
So what does it do?
It's a cloud-based desktop. You just log in, create your username and a password, and off you go. You can just use it as a desktop online.
You know the best one you've had recently is the drivesafe.ly one.
Have you liked that one?
I can't use it. It's not available for Symbian, but the one that I thought that was really good.
Yeah,
I talked about
text,
on the ABC.
Text-to-speeches your incoming messages. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you been using it?
I have. Yeah, it's good. It's quite good.
Do you have any texts to try it out on?
I do. Yeah. Always when I don't need the phone to be making noise and reading stuff out, it seems to do it for me. However, that's not important right now. This week's website of the week is www.eyeos.info.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much. I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
This week's Odd Spot, Andrew, the Proton Accelerator is blurring the boundaries of science fiction. This is something that GD sent us during the week. The Sunday Times says, explosions, scientists arrested for alleged terrorism and mysterious breakdowns. Recently, CERN's Large Hadron Collider
has begun
to look like the world's most ill-fated experiment. I don't think it's a Hadron Collider down the road. No, that's the
accelerometer. Oh, the one they had, that's the one in Switzerland or something, isn't it?
Yeah. Is it really nothing more than bad luck, or is there something weirder at work? Such speculation generally belongs to the lunatic fringe. But serious scientists have begun to suggest that the frequency of CERN's accidents and problems is more than a coincidence. The Large Hadron Collider, scientists suggest, may be sabotaging itself from the future.
What?
Twisting time to generate a series of scientific setbacks that will prevent the machine itself from fulfilling its own destiny.
What?
That's a Star Trek plot.
Look, conspiracy theories, you've been to this.
At first sight, the theory fits comfortably into the crackpot tradition, linking the startup of the LHC with terrible disasters, the best known one being that it's going to trigger a black hole capable of swallowing the Earth. Scientists enjoy laughing at this one. But this time, however, their ridicule has been rather muted because the time travel idea has come from two distinguished physicists who have backed it with rigorous mathematics. If you'd like some more,
yeah,
have
sure.
a look at our show notes.
I can tell them how to fix it. All you got to do to fix the problem is reverse the polarity of the neutron flow.
And don't cross the streams.
Don't cross the streams.
Don't cross the streams.
That was a great film, wasn't it? Hey, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Across the panel there, the person who was just responsible for that odd spot gadget and website of the week, Dr. Ron. JD next to him, Justin's been in, and Graham has been in. Thank you very much, everybody. And we'd like to say a big thank you. And once again, welcome aboard to our new sponsor, D-Link, who are purveyors of fine networking tools, which yep. we all own many thereof. Next week on the show, we have Dr. Feelgood. Yes, the woman who was solely responsible for bringing sex onto the radio here in Australia. Now we're going to be asking all sorts of interesting questions about...
And into the front seat of our cars. We used to sit out in the driveway and listen before we could...
Did you? Is that what you used to listen to it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a good show.
It was on a Wednesday
Sunday
night, I think.
Sunday night.
It used to be on...
Hello Talk.
Was it Sunday?
Yeah. I'm sure it was. I used to remember lying in bed listening to it.
We'll ask her.
We will. Yeah, we will. So be sure to join us next week.
For Pillow Talk.
For Pillow Talk. Once again, thanks. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Pillow Talk.
Well, now there's a concept, isn't it? Yeah, okay. Well, still same time next week.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.